Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the podcast. I'm here with John and Bill, and we are in West Palm Beach recording for you today. And today we're going to talk about permanency-focused advocacy, one of the biggest problems facing lawyers in every corner of the country and every county is caseload size, it's resources, it's time, and all of the things that we talk about bump up against the same challenge. And so what we really wanted to do today was define for you a type of advocacy that helps you use your time and resources in the most effective way possible for your clients. And so I'm going to kick it over to John to start talking a little bit about permanency-focused advocacy.
Thanks, Angela. At its core, what permanency-focused advocacy is looking at every child, even though every child is unique and has their own special needs and special facts, but every client as having the same specific legal problem, and that's being in the custody of the state when they need to be in the custody of a family. And I don't really want to talk about best interests versus express wishes here, because permanency-focused advocacy doesn't look at that dynamic. What it looks at is you have a client who has a very real legal problem. They're in state custody. We happen to believe anyone in state custody should have trained counsel to represent them and help them with that issue. Now, as children's lawyers, we run into a lot of problems keeping our eye on the prize sometimes. And there's all kinds of reasons for that. First of all, our clients are children, so there is a natural inclination to feel maternal or paternal towards children. There is a very popular school of thought in our profession that we should be providing holistic representation. You should represent the whole child. However, we all have limited resources. There's only so much time in the day. Many of the problems our clients present with are going to continue to be problems as long as they are not in the custody of a permanent family where they know they are safe and stable. I want you to think about the child who's in school, in the classroom. He's the only foster child in that classroom, and he's acutely aware of that, most likely, and probably made aware of it in subtle and not so subtle ways sometimes, because kids can be cruel on a daily basis, if not at least weekly, if not daily basis. And so we're wondering why he can't learn, right? And why can't he sit still? Why can't he concentrate? And so, you know, you can advocate for an IEP meeting. You can be on a first name basis with his school teacher, but ultimately you're his lawyer, and everything you do, nothing is going to change the fact that he is the only foster kid in that classroom and he can't concentrate.
So I think what you're saying is that kids in foster care may have some problems, but the reason they have some of these problems is because they are in foster care.
Yeah, and so many of their problems, educational, behavioral, even, you know, mental health, they're going to be best met in the context of a family.
So what you're really talking about is looking at the issues that your client has and determining, is this a symptom of the fact that they're in foster care, or is this something that we have to resolve to get them home?
Yes.
Determining, making that decision, because there's always going to be more issues than you have time to address.
Right. And this is where it becomes difficult, because, and maybe somewhat controversial, to be saying, don't try to represent the whole child, because you're maybe doing the child a little bit of a disservice if your attention is being pulled in down tangents when ultimately what he needs is to get out of state custody. So we've had I can't tell you how many times I have heard, followed up with an adoptive parent who has said, she's off all her meds. He's off all her meds. And we've thought, are you kidding me? They couldn't function without those medications. Nope. They're AB honor roll students. They're off all their meds. And that kind of anecdotal evidence, it kind of informs or confirms what we believe, which is that kids need to feel their home. And when they feel like they're home and they're not going to move anymore, very often that's the cure for some of what they're doing.
How does a child's attorney know that or what the issue is that needs to be resolved in order to get a child to a permanent home?
I think the test there is I want them to be successful in a permanent home, whether it's going back to their family or going on to an adoptive family. So if the behaviors are making them unstable, if the behaviors are making it them unable to function in a family setting, then I need to triage those. I need to work on those, okay? I need to get him or her stable enough to function well in a family setting. And once I've done that, I need to move on and focus on the permanency issues in the case that are keeping him in foster care. That's where my time is best spent.
But what are the permanency issues? Is it what the parent has to do in order to get the child home? Is it what a relative has to do in order to take the child into their home?
Yeah, well, there's all kinds of things like that, and we could do a whole series of episodes on what things you do, what are the tasks that drive permanency focused advocacy. But they are things like looking at concurrent planning and where is the child placed and are they in a home that could be their forever home if they can't go home. Visitation. It is, and also what's going on with those parents. Are they doing what they need to do? That's what I need to be focusing on, really, is so much of what we do is driven by these parents and whether or not they are stepping up to the plate. That's where I need to focus a lot of my attention.
I completely agree with that. The approach is to address the child's one issue that is blocking permanency. And I agree that a lot of times that issue is that we just need to get them home, that everything will resolve for those children once they are in a home, whatever that home is. It's not necessarily the parent, it's whoever it is. We have to give them a chance to thrive and not just put salve on a wound.
Yes, it's driven by the parents' compliance and whether or not they're going to succeed on their case plans or not.
Well, and also whether the agency is getting them the services they need to succeed. So it's all of those pieces. But you said earlier it's controversial to say that you shouldn't, holistic representation isn't the answer. For me, as you say that, what I hear instead is, you're never going to have enough time to handle every single issue for a child. You cannot track down every part of their life and make it ideal while at the same time trying to get them home. And so I don't see it as controversial, because what you're really saying is the top priority is getting them home. And anything that's any barrier to that, we're going to knock down. We're going to work on that, but we're not going to be able, we can't, unless things change dramatically in terms of time and resources, we have to prioritize. And we should always be prioritizing for the number one legal problem, which is a permanent home.
Right. I mean, we're attorneys and we have a client, and they come to you. If a client comes to you with a divorce situation, that's what you help them with, right? You help them resolve the legal problem they are presenting with. Here we have a child client presenting with most likely the most significant legal problem they will face in their lifetime, unless they're facing the death penalty one day, God forbid. This is it. It doesn't get much more significant for a child than losing your birth family. So I have to enforce the laws that are in effect to protect them on their behalf. They do not understand what they're up. They don't understand the risks that they are facing by an extended stay in foster care. They don't understand the risks inherent in being in a crowded foster care system, of having multiple caregivers when they're young, of being in state custody. They don't know why those laws are in effect to protect them. So I have to step in as their lawyer and get them out and resolve that legal problem for them as quickly as possible.
What comes to mind, though, is that there's a potential, I think, for a cookie-cutter approach to cases, is that there's a strategy that we think could apply to each and every case no matter what. And I don't think that's what we're saying. In fact, I know We're not saying that. Each case is unique. Each child is unique. The parents are unique. And while we want to get the children to a home, it's not a cookie cutter approach. You have to use insight and investigation to determine what that one thing is that needs to be dealt with in order to get the child home.
Yeah, I think in making these decisions with children, I say with because every child should be allowed to inform the representation to the extent they are capable, right?
Yeah.
And in making these decisions for kids, we want them to inform, but ultimately, as their lawyer, we're the professional that has been brought in to counsel and advise them, but also to resolve this legal problem for them. And I think you have to operate from the perspective that the time frames in the law are there for a reason. They're handed down by the federal government for a reason. Now you can be cynical and say it's money driven, or you can not be cynical and say, well, it's because bad things happen to kids who stay in foster care for 4 and 5 years. I've seen that in my career. I remember before the Adoption and Safe Families Act, there were kids in foster care for 4, 5, 6 years. Some of them actually went home after 5, 6 years. Their outcomes were not very good after 5 years in foster care. But those laws are there for a reason. And so, I mean, back to the medical analogy, right? There are the American Academy of Pediatrics has guidelines in place for a reason. There's a vaccination schedule for a reason. You know, there's protocols about when you send a child to a specialist for a reason. And I think as children's lawyers, we have to exercise our professional judgment to know when it's time to so to speak operate on the child and either put them back, graft them back onto their birth family or permanently sever that relationship and graft them onto an adoptive family. And that it's difficult to be involved in that decision making, but that's our role.
But I'm going to go back to the cookie cutter approach. I mean, with the caseloads that some of us as children's lawyers have, the only way it feels sometimes to get through anything is a cookie cutter approach. But yet we still don't believe that. The only approach is the focus that you're given to a case, and that's permanency focused advocacy.
I think I do. I think what I'm taking from what you're saying is that every child informs the representation sort of by who they are. I mean, there are kids who absolutely can never be separated from their birth parents because they're just, you know what, it would almost be better for them to grow up in foster care, even though they can never safely live with their parents, and still have that parent-child relationship. There's some kids that are just such a part of their birth family. I've had a girl who, and her 4 sisters, they were so attached to their birth family. I won't give the last name. Let's just say...
Should you even give the first name?
No, I'll just go with the last... I'll come up with her last name, Goodrich. Let's just say Goodrich family. And I just remember at the termination of parental rights trial of one of the girls, the father said, "You can terminate my rights, but they're Goodriches, and they're always going to be Goodriches." And he was right. We terminated his rights. None of them could be adopted. They were tight. They were a member of that family, and so with the youngest, she was like, "I do not want to be adopted." We made the decision to let her grow up in a group home where she was comfortable because forcing adoption on her was just so against her identity. And yet you have other children, right, who are, I'm done. I don't want to go back to that situation. They may be my blood family, but I'm not feeling it. I'm feeling this over here where I'm fed, I'm clothed, I'm safe. I can go on and achieve my potential in life. And you've got those kids and everything in between.
But how can you be active on each and every case when you have a caseload of 150?
Well, but they're not all at the same place in the timeline, for example. So I think it's always going to be about prioritizing. And I think if you know, like if you've got a high probability reunification case, you have a motivated parent, it's their first time in, You want to help make sure that those services are in place right away. Because why keep that kid away any longer than necessary? If it's a dirty house case, let's move it. You know, let's get it. Let's get the child back home as soon as possible. You can't. I mean, you all know my story. I at one point had 500 clients at a time. I couldn't even see. You know, just running. But I think that from that perspective, if every time you open the file, you're kind of asking yourself, what is the one thing I can do that's going to move this child closer? Whether it's at this moment or if I need to put a tickler on my calendar and make sure this happened, what is it? Then at least you have a focus. You're not just reacting to all of the, you know, putting out fires. I always like thinking about the cases where things don't happen in between hearings until like the day before the hearing. So you lose 3 months at a time. And I think if you look at those kind of cases and if you do the monitoring, whatever referral is supposed to be made, if you follow up and bring that case back in, you can shave off months at a time on some of these cases and bring them to resolution more quickly. And that is not, I think that's almost, it's the antithesis of a cookie cutter response. It's looking at when you can shorten the time frames and it works in the child's interest, you do it. Sometimes you have to extend it because that's the right outcome for a kid. But I think that idea of you don't just show up at the hearing, go through the motions, and make a call the day before. You're active all the way through to make sure that case is moving.
Right. And let's not, you know, I guess let's not mince words. We think that this form of advocacy would lower the amount of children in foster care if it was adopted globally.
But I think people would say to you, John, that children's lawyers, we all do this type of advocacy, this permanency-focused advocacy.
Right?
I'm not sure because I when we speak nationally, a lot of people don't say that. And actually, I've been told that this focus is somewhat unique. And listen, there is the debate of, you know, isn't due process enough? Isn't just having an attorney in court enough? Should attorneys hold themselves out to producing outcomes for clients? And there's no doubt we're promoting a brand of advocacy that says we want to have an outcome. We want to actually help them resolve their specific legal problem. So that's another internal debate within our profession. But nationwide, if we were all pulling in this direction, I think we believe it could transform child welfare. And what that does for the child welfare system, it also does for you with your high caseloads, right? Anyone out there with high caseloads is that eventually those numbers would subside.
While it might go without saying, I'm going to say it anyway, this is a litigation-focused advocacy. This is not something where we just rely on social work. I'm not saying social work is a bad thing. It's actually a necessary thing. But this is truly where you are still a lawyer in this field, and you can use the procedure, use the law to get what needs to be done for the child, which is returning the child to a home.
So our goal today was to really give you a preview of permanency-focused advocacy. We will definitely in later episodes go into more detail into how you actually put that into practice. But we wanted to share with you kind of a preview of a way that you can go about bringing down your own caseload and achieving excellent outcomes for kids. And we hope you've enjoyed the podcast today. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.